At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This podcast is brought to you by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
I'm Dylan, and this week we're talking about the best black cards in CEDH.
But before we do, if you want to help support us directly and get some awesome extra perks, make sure you check us out on Patreon at the link below.
Black cards in CEDH.
Black cards in CEDH.
My favorite color in all of Magic, especially in CEDH. Arguably the best or second best color in CEDH. I think some people might say blue. I actually kind of say blue. Some people might say black. Although it's my favorite, I don't think it's actually the strongest color, but it's very powerful.
I would also say that it's the second strongest color in CEDH. Although if you watched our Ranking Colors podcast, they actually tied. Blue and black actually tied last year.
Realistically, they're very close. They both offer something kind of unique and very strong in singleton four-player commander, one of which is the Tutors of Black, being able to find anything out of your deck. So we don't have a lot of consistency because we're playing singleton, 100-card decks. So we have to be able to get the important cards that we need. So tutors are very, very strong. And then we talked about blue last week. So if you want to hear why we think blue is strong, counter spells, you can watch that podcast from last week.
But the other thing that makes this color so strong in the format is that there are so many really good long-term advantage engines and actual win conditions in this color that allow this to be like a main color instead of just a supporting color.
Yeah, and black has also gotten a lot of good tools recently. It was strong in the beginning. It's got old, powerful cards, and it's also gotten a lot of heat recently. So it's got a lot from all angles.
Yeah, I love that for a color. So do you just want to dive right into this list then?
Let's dive.
All right, we're going to start with one of these old powerhouses called Yawgmoth's Will.
I've heard of it.
I forgot to pull up Scryfall in advance, so I'm going to pull up Scryfall right now.
I'll keep talking so that you don't have any dead air since we don't have the ability to edit this.
Oh, yeah. I've decided that I'm done editing the podcast.
It is what it is.
They're just going up as they are now. Yeah. So Yawgmoth's Will is 2 and a black for a sorcery that says until end of turn, you may play cards from your graveyard. If a card would be put into your graveyard from anywhere this turn, you exile that card. This is like the black Underworld Breach, the original Underworld Breach, except you get to play lands and you don't need to continuously exile stuff from your graveyard to replay things. But the only other difference, though, is that you can't like loop Lion's Eye Diamonds with this because it will exile the second it tries to go back to the graveyard.
Yeah, this one was once, I think, much more of a powerhouse in CDH. Since Underworld Breach got printed, Breach in our format kind of just does the same thing but a little bit better. We just had a vintage match actually go up on the main channel in which Yawgmoth's Will was very powerful and did some things like playing a land from your graveyard that Underworld Breach cannot do. But Underworld Breach being able to be a very efficient actual win-the-game combo piece with Brain Freeze and Lion's Eye Diamond, as well as just being able to set up basically any win condition if you have enough cards. You know, Demonic Tutor plus Underworld Breach is just allows you to set up anything that you want, whereas Yawgmoth's Will, you kind of have to work a little harder for it, maybe?
It's more like a recursion, like a graveyard recursion piece as opposed to a combo finish outlet, where it feels more like Black's answer to Eternal Witness.
Or Black's version of Eternal Witness.
Exactly, yeah. Whereas this allows you to try to Thassa's Oracle Consult after it didn't work the first time. So that's really all this is doing, is just giving you a second chance at something you want.
Yeah, I would say this card was once probably like a 5 out of 5. These days, I rate it a little bit lower, probably closer to like a 3.5 out of 5, just because most decks are playing Breach instead.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of times where I want to play this and Breach. Normally, if I want to get stuff out of my graveyard or win through that method, I'm going to play Underworld Breach 100% of the time. This is for more like the blue-black, the Jund decks that just might need a little bit more reach from their graveyard sometimes.
I like this in black-red decks also, just having more ways to like do it again and again since you don't have the blue for counter magic. You have to be able to present multiple wins. So Yawgmoth's Will being able to, you know, help you do that after you try for your Breach turn can be helpful, but it's just, yeah, it's lost some popularity amongst the 4-color and 5-color decks.
Yeah, especially, I think that's a better way to say it instead of just saying, oh, if I'm playing Underworld Breach, I'm not playing this. I think it's more like if I'm playing blue-red Underworld Breach, I'm not playing this. Like, if I'm in Grixis, I'm probably not playing it.
If you're playing blue-red, you can't play black spells like Yawgmoth Swill.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. What I meant to say is, like, if I'm playing blue and red in addition to black, I'm not playing this.
Sure.
I think what you said about playing it in just a Rakdos deck does make sense because you don't have the backup of silences or counterspell protection. So being able to just present another win on another turn, I think, is more important.
Yep.
I'm going to take my cardigan off.
Okay, yeah, good. I'm glad that you called attention to that.
Well, I don't want there to be like a weird continuity error in the middle of the podcast.
You're 100% right. I'm glad you're doing it.
All right, so with all the cards we're going to have on the list, we're going to give them a ranking between 1 and 5. We should have explained this with last week's podcast again, too, just to go over what our rankings are. Basically, if you're a 5, you're in every single CEDH deck. If you're a 1, we don't think you should be in CEDH. 4s are things that we'll see play in many CEDH decks, but not all of them. 3s we'll see play in probably some very specific decks, 1 or 2 specific decks. 2s we think might see play, but probably won't see play. And then 1s, like you said, won't see play. So that's just to explain why we're ranking things the way we will be ranking them moving forward.
For me, Yawgmoth's Will, somewhere around a 3.5.
I think it's somewhere around in there too, because we have talked about like a number of scenarios where we do want this, but it's not going to come up in every black deck now.
Yep.
Toxic Deluge is a 2 and a black sorcery. We're sticking on these 2 and a black sorceries. As an additional cost to cast the spell, pay X life. All creatures get minus X until end of turn.
The premier board wrath of the format, I would say. This is the one that you're going to go to first. This is the best sweeper that we have access to. It has a low mana cost, both how much you have to pay for it and what's actually printed on the card. Things like Blasphemous Act probably would be a lot better if they didn't really deal you a bunch of damage off ad nauseum type effects. But this is still a powerful card. You have to pay the life, which is not nothing, but more often than not, paying 3 or 4 life is going to get rid of everything.
That's normally the max you put into it.
I like this card a lot, but it's certainly not in every deck for sure. It's got to be in a deck that's more prioritizing looking for answers than actual presenting questions. And in CDH, more often than not, presenting questions, aka like being on the offense and trying to go for the win, is just better than clearing up the board.
There's more decks that I found that I want something like this in nowadays, because as boards get gummed up and more grindy, I want something like this just to answer everything. But with Winota being played less, I'm also like, do I want this as much as I wanted it in 2023?
Yeah, I think a lot of the times now, if I can play Culling Ritual, I'm leaning towards Culling Ritual more than Toxic Deluge.
Wow, what a great point.
Yeah, because just the extra mana is so huge. You turn your wrath into like a, I get rid of all your stuff that's, you know, bad for me, like the Drowneth Magistrate, the Collector Roof, whatever, whatever. And then you get so much extra mana to do stuff with. The issue is that, you know, they're different. Toxic Deluge can't kill non-creature permanents, but Culling Ritual can't get rid of bigger things, bigger creatures. So there's some payoff. But for me, normally, I don't really want like 2 sweepers. And I've been leaning more on this one when I can play green spells.
I like this one when my commander has 4 or more toughness specifically. So like a cast a Kenrith or something like that, where I can reliably have my commander stay alive after I've done this. But I think you're right. We're not really playing this in every single deck. I think this is getting around a 3.5 as well. Maybe it goes up to a 4.
I don't think it's quite a 4. I think it's probably, I guess it is maybe a little bit more common than Yawgmoth's Will. If I had to guess, I would say probably more people are playing Toxic Deluge. So maybe I'll go with 3.7 for me.
Okay, yeah, maybe it is somewhere in the middle there. How about a 3.75?
Or maybe Yawgmoth's Will should just be more of a 3. Because Yawgmoth doesn't really see that much play.
It's like, really not seeing that much.
When I'm thinking about Toxic Deluge, which is another card that doesn't see a ton of play, and Yawgmoth sees even less play than that, maybe 3.5 is too high. I'm going to change.
Okay.
Yawgmoth's Will is a 3. Toxic Deluge is a 3.5 for me.
My only thought is that I feel like these are cards that we see more in tournaments than we see them anywhere else, maybe. Like, Toxic Deluge is something that does very well inside of the tournament meta, whereas I guess it's pretty good going into a meta blind, too. But if you end up learning that there's a lot of decks that it's not actually that good against in your meta, then maybe you don't want it as much.
Okay.
I don't know. I think 3.75. I think 3.75 is still okay with it. Yeah.
Okay, we're not decimal points with 2 figures now.
Oh, you haven't watched the Blue podcast that went up the day that we're recording this?
What did we do?
Oh, I have a 4.22. We have a 4.94444 in
really?
There. There's a couple of times I had to resize numbers.
I swear I black out when we do the podcast and then we're done. I'm like, is that good? And you're like, yeah. I'm like, great. I wasn't here for it, so... This is some other guy. This isn't me.
I love knowing that you're just unconscious for the entire podcast, but you come back to at the end.
Yeah, was that good?
What a bit. Oh, I love that.
This card's good, though. 3.75, that sounds right to me. Toxic Deluge. I like it, but not always. I'm not playing it in the decks that I have right now that are playing black. And I'm playing three CDH decks that have black mana.
I guess that's why it's not a four or a five.
Yeah.
Demonic Consultation is our next card. This is a black mana for an instant that says, name a card. Exile the top six cards of your library, then reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a card with the chosen name. You put that card into your hand and exile all the other cards revealed this way. So this exiles your library so that you can win with Thassa's Oracle.
This is the crux of our format. This is the center point. This is the focal point. This is what our whole format is all about. This one card with Thassa's Oracle. To me, personally, I think Tainted Pact, the other version of this card that we'll probably talk about, is one of the few versions of a card that costs more mana, but is just, I think, better.
Straight up better, yeah, strictly better.
Consult is still good. It's the cheapest, most efficient two-card win con. It's part of it, and we have in the format. I give it like a 4.95, but it's not a 5, because there are some decks that do not play Demonic Consultation. There are some decks that do not play Thassa's Oracle, and they will play Tainted Pact just as a tutor.
And we'll talk about Tainted Pact a little bit more once we get there, but I totally agree. I think that's the reason why I don't want to give this a 5. This is also something that can be used as like a piece of interaction if you're desperate for it, but it's not getting a 4.9 because of the actual intended use of the card. It is just getting this high of a rating because of its placement in this, in the best combo in CEDH.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, exactly. As an interaction, as a tutor, I think this card is ass. Do not go looking for Mana Crypt with this thing. If you're looking for interaction, if like you know for sure you're dead right now. If you're not dead right now, Demonic Consultation can be a bad bet. The odds are just not in your favor that you're not going to exile a huge chunk of your library.
Yeah.
If you get rid of win conditions, if you get rid of things like that, it can be hard to continue playing the game at all. If you have to do it, you have to do it. It's better than losing the game, but it's not something that you should go out of your way for. Like Cam said, it's here because with Thassa's Oracle, it is a 3-mana, 2-card combo that is extremely efficient.
I actually did have a game. The first time that we did a tournament at Cloud City, I had a game where I did consult for Mana Crypt on my first turn.
It had to have been wrong. Why did you do that?
I had like a Rhystic Study in my hand too, and like whatever my hand was like, oh, this is a turn one Rhystic Study, and I can be in an amazing shape if I can just go for this. And I was very close to winning that game. I had a separate misplay where I just cast Kenrith instead of holding up Interaction. That ended up screwing me, but it wasn't like a complete
really
situation where I fell out of the game. But
Don't do that.
I will say, I also did not feel very good about it either.
How many cards did you exile?
Oh, most of my deck.
Yeah.
It was most of my deck, but Thoracle was still in my library. So like I still had an out to like, well, I just draw Thoracle and just play the game for a little bit longer. I'll win.
Yeah, I would not advise that. But,
oh, no, I wouldn't either. But it was just funny. Let's talk about this Tainted Pact card then. This is one in a black for an instant that says, exile the top card of your library. You may put that card into your hand unless it has the same name as another card exiled this way. Repeat this process until you put into your hand or you exile two cards with the same name, whichever comes first.
Important to remember that you cannot have two basics that are the same if you're playing Tainted Pact. This is why we play snow basics a lot of the time. So if you hit basic mountain twice in a row, Tainted Pact is going to stop. So you have to have mountain and a snow mountain if you want to play two mountain. Tainted Pact is incredible. That being said, an instant speed demonic tutor that you can stop when you want to and doesn't necessarily have to exile your whole library. Sometimes you just need a counterspell. Any counterspell will do. You can get there pretty quickly. Whereas Demonic Consultation, you have to specifically name the Force of Will, and who knows when you'll get there.
What's really cool about this card, too, is that non-blue decks will play this in conjunction with Praetor's Grasp, knowing that other players will have a Thassa's Oracle for them to steal with that, and then they can set up their own Thoracle Consult win without even having to play blue.
It also obviously combos with Thassa's Oracle at 4 mana, 2 cards, you can win the game as well. Card super strong. To me, Tainted Pact is a 5. It goes in every blue-black deck, and it also goes in like most black decks, just as a tutor that you can, like you said, combo with Praetor's Grasp sort of, or also just like find what you need at instant speed right into your hand. That is a rate that we don't really see otherwise, so I like this card a lot, obviously.
Yeah, really like Tainted Pact. Huge number 5 for this one, yeah. We got a couple of other ones that I think are going to get 5s too. I mean, spoiler alert, but I mean, how am I not going to give a 5 to Orcish Bowmasters now? This is one in a black for a 1/1 Orc Archer with Flash. When it enters the battlefield and whenever an opponent draws a card except for the first one drawn on each of their draw steps, it deals 1 damage to any target and then you amass Orcs 1.
Skrut hasn't been out long, but it has already very heavily shaped our format.
It has really cemented itself as one of the best things you can be doing in this color.
Yep, it helps control the board. It helps you finish the game by just attacking your opponents. Eventually, your army is going to get huge. It allows you to block forever, over and over again, because every time you'll just make a new army, which can be helpful to stay alive. Cards overall are just super powerful. It punishes one of the most powerful things to do in our format, which is drawing extra cards.
Sometimes it punishes it. Other times it punishes other players because someone's drawing cards and you just happen to have the Birds of Paradise. What am I going to do? Not ping off your Birds of Paradise?
Sure, yeah. Sometimes that can happen as well.
But this card is just another reason why like wheels have started to see more popularity too. It is not an instant win the game when you wheel like some of the previous payoffs that we've gotten before, but it still sets you up to be in such a good position. You make the Adnaz player not be able to Adnaz. You just wipe the board. It is such a really good two-card combo, air quotes.
Definitely been another big push to have black stack decks be really powerful, because this, along with the kind of recent-ish printings of Opposition Agent and Dothi Voidwalker, are like three black creatures. The other ones I'm sure we'll talk about today already are that are really strong actual creatures in play that not only stop your opponents from doing stuff, but help you win the game as well. That type of effect is super powerful. So the more they give black, the better that's going to be. Bowmaster's a five, though, like you said.
Yeah, definitely. So is this better than Tainted Pact? Is Bowmasters better than Tainted Pact? Because Tainted Pact could be a Bowmasters. Is that a reason to put Tainted Pact above Bowmaster?
I think Tainted Pact's a little bit better. It's tricky to say, though. Like, Orcish Bowmaster, I'd rather see my opening hand than Tainted Pact. But late game, I'd much rather top deck a Tainted Pact than an Orcish Bowmaster.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I truly think they're even. If I had to choose one in the draft, I'm picking Tainted Pact first. Or though maybe not, because in the draft, I mean, specifically Thassa's Oracle would be less good, because then if I take Tainted Pact, the next person takes Thassa's Oracle, and then maybe it's not good.
Yeah, the draft, this time the draft really work pick it. Scenario actually does kind of mess it up, because I too think I would take Orcish Bowmasters before Tainted Pact, because I will say a lot of the times Tainted Pact is not being used to get me the card that I want. Tainted Pact a lot of the time is being saved for when I'm trying to win with Thassa's Oracle. So a lot of times it is just kind of sitting in my hand instead of doing something.
With Bowmaster you can just jam.
Yeah, I'm just jamming it no matter what. And that also has flash too. That's also at instant speed.
The jam in the Bowmaster can be a trap, though, because since everyone's playing Bowmaster, if you jam yours first and someone gets to kill yours afterwards, that's so sometimes you do want to hold it, depending on the pod.
Nothing feels worse than when you put your wheel on the stack and feel so good with your Bowmaster in play for someone else to flash in theirs in response to your wheel.
Yeah, I would say Bowmaster allows you to get maybe blown out a little bit more. Well, Tainted Pack, you can really suck. You can exile like a lot of your library looking for something that you want.
Yeah,
I guess Bowmaster's
true.
Fault, like floor isn't quite as low.
No.
So yeah, maybe Bowmaster's better than Tainted Pact.
Well, you can stop with Tainted Pact whenever you
right.
want. Like
yeah.
your tutor at that point just failed. Like you don't have what you want.
If it's a tutor that fails, that's not good.
No, that's really bad.
That's also really bad.
Have we convinced ourselves yet that Bowmaster should be higher than Tainted Pact?
I think so, yeah. I think Bowmaster's better than Tainted Pact.
All right, that sounds good. We're putting Bowmasters above Tainted Pact. Then our next card then is Dothi Voidwalker. This is a black and a black for a 3-2 Dothi Rogue with Shadow, so it can't be blocked or blocked except by other creatures with Shadow. If a card would be put into an opponent's graveyard from anywhere, exile it with a Void counter on it. You can tap it and sacrifice the Voidwalker to choose an exiled card an opponent owns with a Void counter on it. You may play it this turn without paying its mana cost.
We all know how this card is. We all know how most of these cards are, but this one in particular is excellent graveyard interaction. It stops everything from going there, so all your Underworld Breach wins, anything that's graveyard-centric, this completely shuts off. Not only that, if you need it to be an evasive attacker, it can be that. Although in CDH, more often than not, I find myself not wanting to attack, just in case. I want to keep it up and available in case someone puts a counterspell under there and I need to use that counterspell. It being part of the Orcish Bowmaster Opposition Agent crew of like stacks pieces that stop your opponents from doing stuff, but then also gain you that advantage. If they put a tutor under there or a counterspell under there, you can use that as well. And then like, wheels, also. It's also really good with wheels.
It's so good with wheels, yeah.
If you wheel, you get all that stuff that everyone discards, and then you get to cast one of those things for free without paying the mana cost.
And it stops so many win conditions. It stops any line that requires survival of the fittest, any line that involves Underworld Breach, like we said, or even like Tyum. It stops Tyum from being able to mill itself and take advantage of getting stuff back. And the more commanders that we get that involve the graveyard, even more we're going to want Dothi Voidwalker. So this is a five. Easy.
Five. Yeah, easy five for me.
Where does this go, though, amongst our two other fives, Tainted Pact and Orcish Bowmaster, though.
I think this one is like, I guess these aren't all exactly fives. To me, truly, I do think they're even. It just depends on the deck. I guess I want Bowmaster in more decks than Dothi.
They're fives because they still are going in just about every
deck.
Even like a lot of turbo decks, whether it's wrong or right, are including these three creatures we keep talking about because of how powerful their effects are that when you don't have access to a Rhystic Study, like you still need something else to get you advantage in some kind of a way.
Yeah, I think Dothi is the only one that I do see some turbo decks cutting. Bowmaster, I see in all the turbo decks, and Tainted Pact, I see basically there too.
Well, you know what? The next one we're going to talk about, I see cut sometimes too from some turbo decks. So does that mean that Dothi Voidwalker actually gets a 4.9?
Yeah, it's more than Demonic Consultation.
It's also just better than Demonic Consultation. Like the words on it are words I'd rather read.
Demonic Consultation is only there for the efficient win. This one does so much more. I think it's still a five. I still got to give it a five, but
maybe it's just under Tainted Pact.
I think it's just under Tainted Pact, yeah. Still all equal in power level, in my opinion. Just in certain decks are going to lean maybe towards a couple of them or the other.
Yeah, I think that's fair. All right, we're going to talk about the final one of these three creatures that we've mentioned a couple times. This is Opposition Agent. 2 and a black for a human rogue 3/2 with flash. You control your opponents while they're searching their libraries. While an opponent is searching their library, they exile each card they find. You may play those cards for as long as they remain exiled, and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to cast them.
Yeah, talk about an even mind sensor.
Yeah, really. But this one allows you to also look at your opponent's hand because you're controlling them while they're searching, so you get all the information.
Yeah, another important little tidbit about this one is this doesn't affect Praetor's Grasp. You only control players while they search their own libraries, not while players search other players' libraries.
Just another case where Magic is like the most literal game in the universe.
Right, yeah. Oppo's great. It's the same thing that I've been saying about the last two creatures. It stops your opponents from doing a very core thing that they want to do, which is search their library, fetch lands, tutors, all the efficiency, all the consistency that we're looking for in Commander is really shut out by this. But then also, if you get them, you really get them. If you can use one of their tutors, they demonic tutor and you can grab it, find anything, it can be super powerful and can really turn the tides. And in a tournament, when we're not doing takebacks, sometimes it's going to happen again and again. So if that can happen, that's rarely going to happen where you're going to get more than that first thing. Is most players are just going to not search. But if you're in a tournament, there's no takebacks, right?
Yeah.
If someone does it, they do it.
Stay quiet.
Stay quiet, yeah. Is it a five, though? There are some decks, the turbo decks, I don't really think are on it quite as much. The three mana is a little bit.
I know, but that could also still be wrong, because it's not like this would be the only three mana spell that they play. This is just another way to gain some additional advantage. When someone plays like a Vamp Tutor or a Demonic Tutor into this, like you are just on cloud nine. It gets a little bit worse when you don't see those spells and it does start to rot in your hand and you're like watching these fetch lands go by and you go, should I be casting this in response to Verdant Catacombs cracking?
Yeah, I know there is definitely an argument that you shouldn't really bother wasting the Oppo on the fetch land because you want to use it on something better. Depends on your style of deck. Sometimes I do think it's fine to just get there in front of the fetch land and then your opponents can't search after that. Great, that's still good for you. It slows them down. That's good.
I also think that like on turn one, let's say you have a land light hand, but you found Mana Crypt and it's your opponent's turn one. It's their only mana source they're going to have, or at least the chance for it to be their only mana source. I think that's a great time to try to do it as well. But like if we're a couple turns into the game and I see that happen, like I'd rather just hold on to it for something a little bit more impactful.
Yeah, definitely. The later the game goes, it kind of becomes a different spell, whereas instead of it being like a stacks piece, instead you're going to use it as like an interaction piece instead to stop someone from their going from their tutor and turn the tides in your favor. I still think it's a five though, right?
I think so too. Like it also stops a lot of different combo lines too. Like you can't saw in half with Hoarding Broodlord while this is in play. You can't go through, again, Survival of the Fittest lines or anything like that. So there's going to be a lot that this actually puts a halt to. It is something that you can't even really ad nauseam through quite a bit as well, because a lot of times the ad nause decks are relying on tutors to find the pieces they need to win. So they now also need to find an additional bounce spell or removal spell in order to follow through with their win, with their game win. So it's something that everyone has to play around. I'm going to say it's a five.
I could see an argument for this being a little bit lower, 4.7 or something like that. Its ceiling is so crazy high. I'm willing to admit that it's one of the strong pulls to be in black right now for CDH. So I think that makes it a five.
I'd rather see this card in my hand than Demonic Consultation. Yeah. I don't know if that also helps it stay towards a five, but I would be okay putting this like underneath Dothy Voidwalker, yeah. Keeping this as like the bottom of all of our fives.
Yeah, I think so.
Cabal Ritual is next. This is one in a black for an instant that adds 3 black to your mana pool, but if you have Threshold, you can add 5 black to your mana pool, and Threshold's when you have 7 or more cards in your graveyard.
For me, this is a 4. It's quite strong. It's probably the second or third strongest ritual that we have, but it doesn't always see play in every single deck. You got to be going fast. You got to be gaining those cards back in other ways with your commanders and stuff like that. Card's certainly powerful, but I don't know that I give it an actual 5. Like, it's just under. I can see cutting it sometimes.
The only reason why it's actually potentially any good is for the Threshold ability. Like, we don't see the red ones, Pyratic Ritual and the other one.
Desperate Ritual?
Yeah, in, like, any red deck anymore. So, the fact that we still see this in black decks is awesome to see. But I would agree, I think a 4 is a good spot for it because there are black decks that don't run it when you're not trying to go as fast, a little bit more permanent based. You don't necessarily need this as much anymore. But when you're trying to fill up your graveyard for Underworld Breach or stuff like that, like, this is the perfect card to have.
I think it's one of those, if you're playing Underworld Breach and Ad Nauseam, then you want to be playing this card. If you're not playing both of them, then you maybe don't need it.
Yeah, I'd agree. I would definitely agree. Dark Ritual is our next card then. This is a black mana to add 3 black mana.
Gotta give it a 5.
I gotta give it a 5.
They got it right the first time. It's the best ritual ever made. I love it.
It's hilarious how much better this is than Cabal Ritual even too. Like, even though Cabal has that bit of an upside, the fact that this is always netting you 2 mana is insane.
Yep, and right from the beginning, you don't have to do anything to turn it on or to get anything for it. It's right away there. You can cast Necro very early on, which can be super powerful. It can help you cast your commanders. It can help you cast Ad Nauseam. Dark Ritual is super powerful. It's an easy 5. Probably, I would say, is it better than Bowmaster? Is Bowmaster a top card right now?
Right now, it's Bowmaster, Tainted Pact, Voidwalker. It's better than Voidwalker.
Yeah.
I'm meh on Tainted Pact, because there
probably
are
worse than Tainted Pact.
There are decks that are cutting it now. I don't ever think it's right.
Yeah, I think Stax decks can play Tainted Pact. Like, decks of all archetypes can play Tainted Pact, and Dark Ritual is extremely powerful in the turbo decks, but it kind of only goes in the turbo and, like, some of the mid-range-ish decks.
If I'm playing Timna, though, I feel like I even want it. Like,
I'm not playing in Blood Pod.
Really?
Dark Ritual? No.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe I should be now since I've gone so much more closer towards just, like, better card quality overall, but even still, like, Blood Pod's philosophy is like individual card quality, so the rituals aren't as good.
Okay, I guess that makes sense, because there's a lot of decks that, like, what you're powering out is like your crown or something, right? It's something else that's going to either net you more cards to make up for the technical card disadvantage that this is, or it's going to be something that's like actively trying to win you the game right now. And I guess in a slow deck like Blood Pod, you don't really have that point. Like, you have other ways to help jam Timna out on turn one that you don't really need this.
Yep. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, worse than Tainted Pact, but still a 5.
Worse than Tainted Pact and still a 5. Okay, yeah, that sounds good to me. Then Culling the Weak is our next card. This is 1 black mana that says sacrifice a creature and add 4 black mana to your mana pool.
Yeah, this is like the core piece of farm decks. We're sacrificing our creatures for mana. This is what farm decks are trying to do. This card's super powerful. It's very similar to Cabal Ritual. It's very similar to Dark Ritual. If you're playing one of them, you're probably playing some of the other ones. This one is probably just under Cabal Ritual, specifically because you need to have that early creature to chunk to it. So with Rograk, this is obviously fucking incredible. With some other commanders, it's a little bit worse, but even still, I like it as like a late game boost of +3 mana, which is really, really good. And oftentimes the thing that you're getting rid of, it doesn't matter because you're going to like win the game with that mana. So it doesn't matter that you're getting rid of something.
Even if you just play like a bunch of one drops in your deck, I think this is fine. Like, even if you're playing like Timna Jeska or something like that, you're still going to have a bunch of one drops. So I think something like this is going to be okay. I would actually still give this a 4, but I personally actually think it's a little bit better than Cabal Ritual. Its ceiling is a little bit higher, even though it does have the setup cost of requiring you to sack the creature as an addition to casting the spell. So if it does get mental misstepped, that does set you back quite a bit. But there are not many people misstepping your 1 mana rituals anymore, so I'm less scared of that. More happy with the 1 mana cost of this as opposed to Cabal Ritual.
Yeah, I think that's definitely valid. And also, like, it's not nothing that this can help get rid of an Esper Sentinel or Italian before you go for a Thassa's Oracle win or a Chrom if you need to. Getting rid of your own thing can be relevant sometimes because those forced draw triggers will make you draw and you'll lose the game in response to winning the game. So being able to get rid of those is extra helpful. And so this can do that too. Yeah, I think it's 4, but I guess I could see that it's a little bit better than Cabal Ritual. So maybe is a 4.2.
They're very, very similar. I'll give it a 4.2. I like that. They're very, very similar cards that go in a lot of the same decks, but there's just like a little bit of extra pieces you need for either of them to work out well for you, I guess.
Yeah, Cabala is a little bit more spell-oriented.
Totally agree with that.
And the other one's a little more creature-oriented.
Yeah.
Oftentimes they overlap. They're close enough.
Creatures are getting better too, so I think that's another reason why I'm okay giving Cabala a little bit of a... Nope, the other one. Shut up, Cameron.
That's
move
why
on.
I didn't say it. I said, that's why I said Cabal, and then I said the other one.
Fuck!
Culling the Week.
Culling the Week. Deadly Relic is the first removal spell we're going to talk about. This is free most of the time, although it does say it costs 3 and a black. It's free if you control a commander, but it says exile target creature on it.
So funny, because in other formats, black is known mostly for being the removal color, whereas in CDH, it's not really known for that. That's not its strongest quality.
This is actually only one of two removal spells I have on this list, weirdly enough.
I think this card is strong. I think this card is underrated. I think if you're playing Fierce Guardianship and or Deflecting Swat, and you're also in black, I think you should play this card too.
And the reason why it gets a lot of hate is because of its 4 mana value, but the utility that this thing has and the freeness of it, I think just completely outweighs the potential of losing 4 life flipping it to ad nause.
And exiling the creature isn't nothing. Like permanently exiling a Dockside Extortionist, yes, they already got the treasures, but if they're trying to go for some sort of loop, recursion stuff, exiling that can be super relevant. Exiling things is much better than destroying, I think. So that's also huge. But free is just so good. I think it's super undervalued, even though we know how free is. We know how good that free can be, but I still think that more decks should be playing it. This card's like a 4.5 for me.
I will give you that. I'll say it's a 4.5 because there's not enough decks that are playing it. And I think I'm part of the problem. I don't think I'm playing it enough either. So
it's somewhere around where Toxic Deluge is. I know we say like 3.75 for Deluge. So there's an argument that this could maybe be like a 3.75, but I think it's in that ballpark of Deluge.
Yeah, I would say so too. I don't like the art for this card though. The original art, like what's up with this fucking creepy ass Joker smile that this fucking monster
the dragon.
Has.
I agree. The original art is not so good, but the newer art with the Rakdos.
Oh, I
one.
Love with Judith on
Judith,
it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so
super
cool.
Although it looks like a red card, which is confusing to me because it's like very red, the art.
Yeah, I feel like I want to cross it off and write the deflecting swat on top of it instead.
But it's powerful.
Very powerful, yeah. Our next card is one of your favorites.
Most of these cards are all my favorites.
Which member?
Dismember.
This is 1 and 2 Phyrexian black mana for an instant that says that target creature gets -5/-5 until end of turn.
This card's awesome. It's always like just underplayable, I think, that having to pay 4 life isn't nothing in ad nauseum, and sometimes there's a 6 toughness creature, but the -5/-5 is super relevant, I think. It can get rid of so many things, and for that colorless mana, specifically, you can tap a Soul Ring to be able to cast this. That's like almost free a lot of the time. So good.
In reality, it's dealing with the biggest problems that are in play at all times.
Yeah, I think if you need to get rid of specific stacks pieces, that's where you want Dismember. If you want to get rid of a Collector Oof or a Dranith Magistrate or something like that, one of these like smaller creatures that's stopping you from playing the game, Dismember is really good at that. And it also is just like there are several other very good removal spells, and it's hard to play more than like 3 of them. So like there's like Swords to Plowshare and the Path to Exile, and there's the one that we just talked about, which name I already forgot is
Deadly Relic,
that are all like those 3 are like probably equal in power or maybe a little bit stronger than Dismember already. But in certain decks, if you're in Rakdos, I like Dismember a lot more.
It's tough because this card was better when Winota was in the format.
Yeah, that's true.
And I always liked that, like, this kind of got around the whole everyone's playing 4-butt creatures because of like lightning bolt kind of effects. So like if 3 is the magic number for like getting around Timna or something, you want to make sure that you can get your Timna through. So you want to make sure you have something like Dismember for that reason.
It has gotten weaker over time. I still think it's probably, what do we have at the lowest right now?
So Yawgmoth's Will is a 3. Is it, let's try to make this easier. Is it better or worse than Deadly Relic?
It's probably worse.
Probably worse. So it can't be more than a 4.5.
No, it's certainly not. I'm not sure if it's a 3.5 or a 4. I think it's probably somewhere like a 3.5.
Okay. I'm going to say it has to be worse than Toxic Deluge, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think I'd rather be, especially if I'm in multicolor, blue or white, I would rather have Deluge before I start moving on to Dismember for my removal options. That being said, it has to be less than a 3.75 then.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I think it's similar to Yawgmoth's Will. I think in Rakdos decks, and specifically two-color decks, and specifically Kurik decks, yeah. I think it's probably great there, but only in those specific decks. So yeah, I think a solid three.
Solid three.
Solid okay. three. I wish it was more. I love the card dearly. I love it much more in 60 card than I do in Commander, which is kind of interesting because 40 life, you'd think that for like the life loss would be even more irrelevant, which it is.
But removal in general is better in 60 card formats, so it's just kind of better to see it there. I am actually giving it a 3.1. Just so that it's officially edged out above Yawgmoth's Will, I think this is going to do more for you than Yawg Will in the average deck, which sounds weird because the Yawg Will ceiling is very high, but also requires a lot of setup. This you can just cast.
Yep, I agree. Yeah, 3.1 sounds great.
Cool. Wishclaw Talisman is a 1 and a black for an artifact that enters the battlefield with 3 wish counters on it. And for 1 mana, tapping it and removing a wish counter from it, you can search your library for a card, put it in your hand, and then shuffle. An opponent gains control of Wishclaw Talisman. You can activate this ability during your turn.
Not as a sorcery.
Not just on your main phases.
Anytime on your turn, in response to stuff, on the stack, instant speed on your turn. Card's powerful. It goes right into the pool of other tutors that are staples. I think it's a 5. It can be really good with bounce spells. Activate it, give it to somebody else, use Chain of Vapor to bounce the Wishclaw, pass the Wishclaw again to go tutor for something.
Or like bounce the whole board with Psychrift and get it back.
Exactly,
too.
Yes. It can feed your Dockside because you give them the Wishclaw, cast the Dockside, make more treasures, bounce the Wishclaw, do it again. It can be a part of so many fun things that you already want to be doing in Grixis colors. It being an artifact means that your artifact tutors, like Transmute Artifact, can now tutor for anything in your deck because they can find a Wishclaw, which can find anything. Card's super powerful, 5 out of 5. I don't know if it's the best card we've talked about. Is it better than Orcish Bowmaster? I think it might be.
I think it does have a lot of upside to it. It's better when you're trying to go quickly. Like, if you don't win the game or don't find the protection for your thing with it, like, you do have to give it to other players. Like, the times where it actually does go to 2 other players feels really bad.
Yeah, that's true. You can't just, like, turn 1 tutor for Mana Crypt to play your turn 2 Mana Crypt and do stuff with it. It's not good in that way. It's good to find a win condition or find protection for your win after you've already assembled the win.
And telegraphing that you will be tutoring in the future does put a bit of a target on you too. Like, I do like just getting this out and then pretending like it's just a 1 mana tutor later in the game. But if someone else has a Dockside in the meantime, right? If someone else is willy-nilly, I have an extra land, I'm going to Chain of Vapor that. Or just, right, something else happens to my 2 mana investment where I lose it or have to spend another 2 mana on it. Like, there are times where it's going to feel worse, whereas, like, at least Bowmaster has an enter the battlefield trigger where I can get value out of it right off the bat.
Yep, you're definitely right. I will say, though, having it being on stock and you can just, like, leave it there for a while and being able to activate for a colorless mana for the same way that Dismember is good,
yeah.
Being able to find something at instant speed right to your hand on your turn, instant speed on your turn, for 1 generic mana, I think is really strong. But I see what you mean, that it's not always good early. I don't love it in my opening hand. I could see it being like a 4.5, maybe not a 5. I don't know.
Not every deck that I see is playing it too. But that's another one I might disagree with. I feel like this is your best 3 mana tutor option in black. I don't know why you would play any other ones.
Yeah, to be honest, I wasn't playing it in Blood Pod. Originally, that was because I was playing Collector Roof, but now I'm not playing Collector Roof anymore, and I haven't put this in yet. I'm kind of thinking that maybe I should be. It goes along with the strategy of I want to be able winning on turns with casting as few spells as possible.
That's
so
a
I don't want
to feed
Mystic
Study, man,
so this is
yeah.
a good way to find the Birthing Pod, cast the Birthing Pod right away, hopefully win the game.
Instead of like detutoring for it on that turn instead.
Right, yeah, exactly. So even though I've taken out the Rule of Laws, I still don't want to feed things, so I want to win with as few spells. So yeah, maybe this should be a little bit better.
Being able to tutor and get around Ristic Study is something that no other tutor can do because they don't have this, you know, pre-turn setup
yeah,
here.
It being not a spell, looking for something not a spell is very good.
So we're putting this at the top of our list.
So maybe it is a 5. Yeah, maybe it is a 5.
I'm down to say it's a 5.
Is it better than Bowmaster?
That's really hard.
It could be a Bowmaster.
It's better than Tainted Pact.
Yeah, I think it's better than Tainted Pact.
And that's the second highest card on the list, Tainted Pact.
Yeah, I think it's better than Bowmaster. Bowmaster doesn't help you win the game as much. Wishclaw helps you win the game. It helps you not die sometimes if it needs to. You can team up with a player. Hey, player A is getting out of hand. Player B, I'm going to look for a stacks piece. Will you promise me that you'll find interaction and just hope that they do and they can stop the player who's going to win the game? I mean, it can be good for that too. Yeah, I like it. I'm going to say best black card we've talked about.
Best black card we've talked about so far. Bowmaster's a shit on its own. Like, you just play it, and if no one draws any extra cards, you're stuck with these lame-ass bodies in play. This is always going to do something for you. All right, I like it. All right, let's keep it on with the tutors. We're going to fly through the rest of the tutors then.
We got to briefly go through them, because we know what tutors do.
Yeah,
right?
We know tutors. Yeah, but we're going to talk about Praetor's Grasp first. This,
I like to say what it does.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This is 1 and 2 black for a sorcery that says, search your opponent's library. Target opponent's library for a card and exile it face down. Unless you're playing over webcam, then just say it. Then that player shuffles their library. You may look at and play that card for as long as it remains exiled. So a little bit different than Oppo. Like, you need the actual colors of mana to cast this thing. But being able to search your opponent's library for stuff, like if something happens to your Thassa's Oracle, your Dockside Extortionist, one of these combo pieces you need to win, if you don't have access to it anymore, having access to someone else's is so nice.
I totally agree. I mean, the strengths of this card specifically are... one, it's a win condition. If you find somebody else's Underworld Breach, you play their Underworld Breach. You use the Underworld Breach to cast your Praetor's Grasp to find something else. Same thing you can do with a Tainted Pack and a Thassa's Oracle. If you're playing Tainted Pack and somebody else is playing a Thassa's Oracle, you can Praetor's Grasp to find their Thassa's Oracle.
It's a one-card win con.
It's a one-card win con in a lot of different ways, specifically with the Underworld Breach it is. It's negatives. It's on the same rate as Grim Tutor, and there is an argument that maybe Grim Tutor is like almost as good because you want what's in your library. You want what's in your deck because you built your deck to have good cards. The issue is Praetor's Grasp in tournaments, a lot of the time, you're going to be playing against like 2 to 3 decks that are like basically your deck anyway. They're going to have like most of the same pieces. So, which is why in tournaments, Grasp is a lot better. In non-tournaments, Grim Tutor is maybe a little bit better. But I think Praetor's Grasp is very underrated. That 3 mana as it for a tutor does suck, but it being able to be a win condition, finding Underworld Breach and finding all the other pieces that you need after that, I think like shoots it to very, very powerful. But I don't give it a 5. We're given so many things 5s and because they're all very powerful cards, but I don't think it's a 5 because I don't see it in every deck. It doesn't go in the slower decks where you need specific things.
And when you have access to more top deck tutors, I don't think you see this as much. Like, you see this in Crick a lot because it's basically a 1-mana tutor an opponent's library card in Crick. And you see this in like the Jund ad nauseum decks that are playing Tainted Pact anyway. So they just want to have this as like another tutor that also doubles as a win condition for them. But if you're not able to do that very well, which I guess is kind of hard to not be able to do that very well, but I agree, this isn't going to see play in every single deck out there. So it's not a 5. I don't even know if it's a 4 though.
I think it's a 4. I think because this allows you to not waste extra other slots with other shitty win conditions, it makes it a lot better.
Okay.
More often than not, you want your CDH deck to have roughly, I think, 3 plans. A main plan, a plan B, and then if you need to, you can stitch together this plan C, and then combat damage is normally the plan D. Whereas if one of your full plans can just be on one card, Praetor's Grasp, that's plan C right there. You don't have to waste a whole bunch of slots with an extra combo because it's all just Praetor's Grasp, and then sometimes it's not a win condition. It can be specifically what you need.
So this is Mnemonic Betrayal is what you're telling me? This is a Mnemonic Betrayal for libraries instead of graveyards?
Yes, but I like it more than Mnemonic Betrayal because this one, the game state doesn't have to get to a point where my Mnemonic Betrayal is turned on.
Technically, you can do this on turn one and still get a ton of value off of it.
You can still formulate the plan. Even like your opponents don't have to do anything. They just have to be there and exist. And CDH, we all play similar cards. So more often than not, you're going to be able to find what you want. And it gets around Opposition Agent.
Also true. So, all right, I'm into that. Let's give it a 4. Is it better than Cabal Ritual?
Yeah, it's like a 4.3. I think it's better than the
better
rituals.
Better than Calling the Weak then, too.
Yeah, I think it's better than those rituals just because it has such a high ceiling. 3 mana for a tutor does stink, but I think what it does because of that 3 mana is worth it.
The slot above it is Deadly Relic. I think that's correct as well.
Yeah, I guess.
Because there's so many tutors you have access to already. Like, by the time we throw Praetor's Grasp in, like, it's either... an integral part to us trying to win the game, or it's just like, I just want another win condition that I'm trying to find, right? But again, this is probably something else you're playing more in tournaments, A, because if you're a primary webcam player, you're probably just not running this because it's a pain in the ass to play over webcam, because you do get to secretly choose the thing that you tutor for, and half the time in webcam, I go, I'm too lazy to secretly choose.
Put your Thassa's Oracle, exile it.
Don't send me your Moxfield list. Yeah. I don't have time for this.
Yeah.
So I like 4.3.
4.3 it is.
Cool. That sounds great. What's our next card, Dylan?
Demonic Tutor.
Okay. Demonic Tutor is one in a black for a sorcery that says search your library for a card, put that card into your hand, then shuffle.
The first one, the best one, goes right into hand for 2 mana,
the best black card, right?
This is the best one. This is 5 out of 5, best black card, 5.5 if I could give it. I like it more than Imperial Seal and Vampiric Tutor because it goes right to the hand. No card disadvantage here. It's incredible. There's no. What else can you say about Demonic Tutor? Best black card. I've been seeing some lists cut Imperial Seal lately. As a Timna player, I cannot understand that.
Oh my god! If you're playing the One Ring, why are you cutting? Let's talk about that card first.
Imperial Seal.
Oh my god! Yeah. All right, we're going off on it, buddy. If you're playing the One Ring, why are you cutting Imperial Seal?
Yeah, it's so good. It's such an important card to help you with your consistency of your deck. Card disadvantage stinks, but it's anything you want. Say anything at all.
I know it's a one black sorcery that says search your library for a card, put it on top, and shuffle your library. Although in the opposite order, you shuffle and then put it on top. This card would suck if you shuffled it into your library. But you lose 2 life, right? So it's sorcery speed. Technically, you're not getting that card until like 3 more turns from now.
Well, your deck's second turn, but yeah, 3 players' turns.
And so much can go wrong in that time period is what I mean by that. But again, like if you're playing anything, if your commander draws you a card, which it fucking better, like you should be playing Imperial Seal.
I think it also helps with mulligans, which is like something that I maybe think that other players forget sometimes. This is like an important part. Is like the cards also has to be helpful at mulliganing. You're going to mulligan a lot. The consistency isn't there. And part of the format is you mulligan to 3 or 4 sometimes. So being able to keep land Imperial Seal and know that you can search for a Jewel Lotus out of your deck to get a turn 2 Chrom and inch your way back into that game when you've mulliganed to 3, like that's necessary. You have to have cards that could pull you out of that mulligan, I think. And just the existence of cards like Mana Crypt and Jewel Lotus, as well as Mystic Grimoire and Rhystic Study being targets for the Imperial Seal to find you in the early stages to help you get back into the game, as well as it being a very good win condition finder with things like Timna or the One Ring that can draw the card right away, or just in general in the late game, it's strong.
A lot of people will just look at this card and immediately say that card disadvantage, but it's exactly like you're saying, when you can find things that will make up for the card advantage, then later, like, you can't look at this as just its face value and how it's going to be on the 2 turns between searching the card and getting the card. You have to think about how this card's going to impact your game 6 turns from now, even.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is just so funny. We're not a finance podcast, but it's funny that, according to Scryfall, the Portal 3 Kingdoms version of this card is now $1,000, but you can get the Double Masters version for like $100. Less than $100 now.
It's so infuriating when that's the case, because everyone who says we should keep the reserve list because the cards will lose their value. No, they won't.
This
is
like the best example.
The old ones keep their value and the new ones have a lower value so that everyone can buy new versions of the card, but the old ones are still the classic old ones that will never, nothing will look like that ever again. They're still collectible for the same reason. So like, abolish the fucking reserve list.
Abolish the fucking reserve list.
It's so nuts that it still exists. It's
very, oh my god.
If there's one thing I'm frustrated at Wizards for, that would be the one thing, is that I think that reserve list should go. And yeah, I don't, whatever. Okay. We're not finance.
We're not.
Card super strong. I still give it a 5. I think it's probably under Demonic Tutor, but above Wishclaw Talisman.
I would say the same, actually.
All the top 10 is going to be full of 5s. Is that what the top 10 for the blue and white cards was?
Well, if you remember, we didn't end up doing a top 10. We just did a list.
For the blue and white?
For blue. We didn't do a top 10. We just...
No. Okay. Yeah.
Well, we did, but the end of the podcast just listed like all the cards we talked about.
Were the top 10, were they all 5s?
It was like the top 7 of them were 5s. Yeah, it wasn't like the full top 10, okay. But like, yeah. Vampiric Tutor, Dylan.
Vampiric Tutor is everything that we just said about Imperial Seal, except it's strictly better because it's an instant instead. That's not true. Strictly better doesn't exist in Magic the Gathering, but it is better in 99.99 situations out of 100. It is better.
Yeah, exactly.
Dispel can't counter in Imperial Seal.
I guess that is a reason why that's worse, but I'm still putting Vampiric Tutor at a 5, but above Imperial Seal, though.
It's still better than Imperial Seal.
Beseech the Mirror is 1 and 3 black for a sorcery with Bargain, which which, if you don't remember, means you sacrifice an artifact, enchantment, or token as you cast the spell.
Not a creature, which is a bummer. If it was a creature, this card would be through the roof good.
Oh, yeah. Search your library for a card, exile it face down, then shuffle. If this card was bargained for, you may cast the exiled card without paying its mana cost if that spell's mana value is 4 or less. Put that card into your hand if it wasn't cast this way.
Yeah, so that bargain part of it is why it's so good. If you sacrifice, normally you're going to sacrifice an artifact, a Chrome Mox or a Mox Opal or something like that.
Or like a mana vault if you feel on top of the world.
Yeah, something that you've already used the mana on to cast a Beseech the Mirror or something else, and then you get to get anything that you want, a Thassa's Oracle or an Underworld Breach, right onto cast, which is really good. Into cast or into play?
No, into cast.
Into cast.
Into cast, yeah. So it also will allow you to get the One Rings ETB trigger as well.
Nice. Yeah.
If you're going for something like that.
Card super strong. I think it's stronger in formats like Legacy and Vintage than
Definitely.
It is in Commander.
Because there's really only a set number of Commanders that are actually going to want this.
Right.
The triple black is a real cost.
Absolutely. Yeah. Triple black is a real cost, and having to sacrifice something is also a real cost. There are some decks that don't play all the fast mana, but Blood Pot is a good example of. I'm only playing like 6-7 pieces of artifact mana. If I can't sacrifice it, this is just a 4 mana Diabolic Tutor?
Yeah.
Is that what that card is? That card sucks ass. That's too much mana. It's not good. So you really need to be bargaining it for this card to actually be good, even though in its worst case scenario, a Diabolic Tutor is still going to be fine. You're going to be happy to see it late game. But this card really thrives when you can very quickly turn it on for its bargain cost. Super strong, but just under some of the other ones. I think it still has to prove itself.
Is it a 3 or is it a 3.5?
I would still say it's probably I guess it's not a 4. But maybe it should be.
I don't think it's close to a 4.
You don't
think? I don't think there's enough decks playing it for it to be a 4.
Yeah.
I don't know that we'll see enough decks playing it for it to be a 4. I think it's always going to go to the wayside and like always be considered worse than our top 3 or even top 4 tutors. And it's one of these that like the more colors you add, if I have Worldly Tutor, Mystical Tutor, like if I have access to all this other stuff too, I'm wanting it less.
I think it being able to find the One Ring long term will be good. I think this is a card that over time it's going to get better and better. Actually,
it actually saves you mana on the One Ring,
right?
Too, which is pretty nice.
It's like a Birthing Pot situation when they banned Pot in Modern and they were like, we're going to keep on printing good creature, so Birthing Pot is just going to get too good. I think that's going to be the same thing with Beseech the Mirror. Like, they're just going to keep on printing good permanents, and then Beseech the Mirror being able to put any of them, any right into, like, you can get a creature, enchantment, artifact, you can get all of those
instant
things.
Instant or sorcery, though, too. Like,
instant or sorcery.
Yeah, literally
like,
any card.
That, like, versatility of, like, and then putting it right onto the stack is going to be good, but I think it just needs to find some more homes. I think it's a strong 3.5, though. I'm going to say 3.7, right under Toxic Deluge.
Nice.
Now.
I like that. Because it definitely has some room to grow.
Yeah.
But we'll see how much it does grow. All right. Diabolic Intent is the next one. This is Demonic Tutor, except it requires you to sacrifice a creature as an additional cost.
Part of the package. It's part of the staples. It's not always there. You have to have a couple extra creatures. If you're playing Rograk or green stuff, this is much better. I think this is probably like a high, like a 4.8 or something. It's almost with the Imperial Seal, Vampiric Tutor, Demonic Tutor, Wishclaw, but I think it's right outside of that tiny little circle.
So you think that Bowmaster and Tainted Pact and Dark Ritual and Dothi and Oppo are better than it?
Yes. Yes. Right? You have to get rid of a creature. Sometimes that sucks.
Sometimes.
But it's just Demonic Tutor. Sometimes it's nothing.
Yeah,
sometimes it's just Demonic Tutor.
Straight up, it feels just like Demonic Tutor.
But when it's not, it's worse, which is why it has to be. It can't be a 5. If Demonic Tutor is a 5, I cannot agree this is a 5. The best I can give it is a 4.9, and I think that it's worse than Demonic Constellation.
Okay. I thought this was better than Wishclaw Talisman for a second.
I don't think so.
Our conversation about Wishclaw Talisman today has changed my mind on that.
The upside of Wishclaw is higher than Demonic Tutor even. This has nothing higher than Demonic Tutor. It's strictly worse,
yeah.
I think.
The decks that use Diabolic Intent use it so well that the downside doesn't even seem like anything.
It's normal.
But
it's just a second Demonic Tutor.
I don't play this in, like, Tivit. Like, I feel like it would suck in Tivit, and if I tried to play it in Tivit, I would be like, this is ass. So, I can see how this is not a 5. I can totally see how this is not a 5. I think it's better than some of the 4s that are on here. I think it's still better than Praetor's Grasp. I think my average deck that I'm building now is going to have more things
for Diabolic Intent to sacrifice than the want to rely on someone else's deck.
Yep, Diabolic Intent is still pretty good in some 4 and 5 color decks. It's great in Ajila card. You know, it's great top of the meta. It's really good. Whereas Praetor's Grasp helps some of the tier 2 decks stay more involved because it gives them extra win conditions. So I would agree, Diabolic Intent sees more play in better decks than Praetor's Grasp does. I think Praetor's Grasp has a higher impact, but I agree that it's better than Praetor's Grasp.
This is probably the hardest card to judge for me so far.
What's right under Demonic Consultation right now? Can you tell me that?
Under Demonic Consultation is Deadly Rollick.
This is better than
4.5. I think it's better than Rollick probably too.
At 4.5 and 4.9?
How about we put this at 4.7?
I love it. 4.7, this sounds great as a 4.7. Because I do think it's in between those two, between Demonic Consultation and the other one that you said.
Thank you for talking me down from there.
There you go.
So that's that. Now, we have 4 more cards we're going to talk about. Can you guess what any of these cards are?
One of them's got to be Ad Nauseam. Should I guess all of them?
No, we're going to start with Ad Nauseam.
We'll do like that. Okay.
That starts, sounds good. Ad Nauseam, 3 and 2 black for an instant that says reveal the top card of your library and put it into your hand. You lose life equal to its converted mana cost. You may repeat this process any number of times.
Still, I would say this is one of the, if not the strongest thing to be doing in our format. I think someone argued that the mid-range hell that we're in is pulling a little bit away from Ad Nauseam. I still think Ad Nauseam can be quite powerful, especially since Flash got banned, which was already like 4 years ago. Ad Nauseam, in my mind, has been like the top dog since then. It assembles Underworld Breach very easily. It assembles Thassa's Oracle really easily. You do what you want to do anyway, which is have very cheap mana things anyway, which is good.
It's the best one card win condition in the format, in my opinion, because it gets you all of the different things you could want. It's unlike Intuition, where Intuition only gets you like one combo. This can find you protection, and that one combo
protection
is the best part of it.
That's
too
huge.
Right? As long as you can jam your Ad Nauseam through, you will be resolving the rest of your spells.
I see cards like Shared Summons sometimes be talked as like the green Ad Nauseam because it's a 5-mana spell that gets you 2 things that will win you the game, which is kind of what Ad Nauseam does. But the difference is Ad Nauseam normally gets you those 2 things that you win the game, as well as several pieces of interaction. So if you can get the Ad Nauseam to resolve, you also have counter backup now, which is something that you didn't have before. Card super strong. It's definitely weaker recently. I think it's gone down just a little bit.
Does that affect the rating that we're going to give it, though?
Tiny. Like, I mean, when decks like Tivit and Atraxa are very high-performing decks that use black cards or not playing that card, and even decks like Blue Farm, I've heard a lot of pilots say that Ad Nauseam is kind of like one of the worst cards in the deck. You play it just because you can, and it's not that much of a loss. I do think it's gone down a notch or two in CDH recently, but that's kind of a metagame thing, not necessarily
it's not the card's power level.
Yeah,
it's not like the Tormagoy Fatal Push situation, right?
We've all figured out, like, we have to beat Ad Nauseam. Like,
yeah.
We all know, like, we have to attack the Ad Nauseam player. We have to gear our entire decks around being able to beat Ad Nauseam.
And this is one of those cards that will continuously come back from being bad in the format to being great in the format. It will just take the format going in a specific direction for that to happen. So even though it's not being played in every single deck, I can't not give Ad Nauseam a 5.
Yeah.
Because it is so iconic and so much of what CEDH is about, it's what allows you to win quickly and like really establish the entirety of Turbo in the format. I can't not give it a 5. I could be convinced to put it under Demonic Tutor, but I might say that it's the best black card to have in black.
Yeah, it's tough to say. I do think it's above Dothi Voidwalker, Opposition Agent, Orcish Bowmaster. I think it's above those. And then above that, I think we have like Imperial Seal, Vampiric Tutor, Demonic Tutor, and then a Wishclaw?
Wishclaw, Imperial Seal, Vamp, Demonic Tutor is the top 4.
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather see Ad Nauseam. It's tough, like opening hand versus late game. Late game, Ad Nauseam gets worse and worse and worse. Opening hand, I want to see Ad Nauseam.
Opening hand tutors are just tough in general. Like, unless it's very obvious what you're missing from your hand, a lot of times you're just like saving them for later or until someone wheels it out of your hand.
And I don't know if this is real, so this is just my opinion, but I think some of the Ad Nauseam losing some popularity is just people get bored and they want to try new things.
It's been around for so long.
It's been around for so long and they want to try the Tivit and they can justify, say, oh, I don't really need Ad Nauseam anymore, so I'll try that. I want to try Traxa. I don't really need Ad Nauseam anymore, so I'll try that. I don't know if that makes it not as good anymore. I think maybe just we're sometimes bored of it.
It's just player preference at that point. It doesn't make it not good. I think I agree with you.
I think it's a 5 out of 5, but I can't put it above Demonic Tutor. For me, it's below Demonic Tutor.
Honestly, I would even give you Vamp Tutor above it too, now that we're saying all this, because there is no deck in black cutting Vamp Tutor or Demonic Tutor, but every other card on this list does have a consideration to be cut. So this feels bizarre, but Ad Nauseam is going in number three.
Third best black card, yeah.
Necropotence. Three black for an enchantment that says skip your draw step, and whenever you discard a card, you exile that card from your graveyard. So it still hits your graveyard and then gets exiled.
It's a trigger, which is specifically important sometimes.
Not a replacement effect. So they actually... I don't know why I'm interrupting the reading of the card, but if you go to discard stuff with a Dothi in play, it will actually go under Dothi Voidwalker instead.
Right. It never goes to the graveyard.
It will never even see the graveyard. Yeah, any replacement effect like that is going to fuck with it. But you can pay one life to exile the top card of your library face down, and you put that card into your hand at the beginning of your next end step.
This card has gotten a lot better. Oh, there's more to the card, sorry.
No, that's it. That's the end of the card.
Is it?
Yeah, because I said everything else and then interrupted myself.
Oh, okay. This card has gotten a lot better recently with cards like Born Upon a Wind and people playing more Final Fortune type effects, although the other Final Fortune effects are sorceries, so that one's not quite the same, but similar. You can cast them first and then Necro, right? The issue with this card is you put a whole bunch of cards in your hand and you gotta exile, discard most of them, and then you have seven, and then you pass a turn, and then your opponents say, whoa, warning, everyone leave up mana and all your counter spells. That stinks. But if you can Born Upon a Wind, which means that you can, there's a moment where you put all those cards into your hand, and before you discard and exile them, you can cast spells then. There is a moment where they're all in your hand at one time.
Because it's on your end step.
It's on your end
step. So before you pass to the cleanup step, you can cast that.
Right, so if you Born Upon a Wind with all those cards in your hand, you can win right there since all the stuff now has flash. So that's incredible, and I love that new addition to these decks. Final Fortune is another similar thing where you can sculpt a perfect seven and then go immediately to your next turn, and your opponents don't have a chance to interact.
I mean, we've been seeing Xur the Enchanter do this for years, where it just flashes in like a Shimmer Mirror and can just unload artifacts.
Right, yeah, but now more decks, because of Born Upon a Wind, have access to it. Necro still isn't always the best. I think it doesn't see play in every Turbo deck. You have to be willing to abuse it with some of those cards that I mentioned, and it certainly doesn't see play in the Stax decks. I like it a little bit more in mid-range, actually, just using it as exile 10 cards, you know what I mean? Not 30, just going, just like refilling your hand every turn
or
can
even
be really
three.
Good.
Even
or
doing even like 3 to 5,
just
even,
doing a couple
yeah.
can be really good, especially if you have any way to like gain some of that life back with your commander, maybe something like Atraxa, that could be really good. So, cards certainly powerful, not nearly what it was 5 years ago. It's lost a little bit with the printings of just other cards,
but definitely has come back from its lowest point, which was probably last year,
for
or like
a while,
2022, early 2023, I think.
For a while, I was thinking of it the same as Yawgmoth's Will, of just like kind of days of the past. It's really not quite there
if
anymore.
If I have Dark Ritual, it's really good. And if I don't, this feels really slow.
Right. But recently, I have been thinking it more and more. So I think I give it like a 4.5 right now.
Yeah, I'm fine with giving it a 4.5. This is a clear one that's not going to see play in every deck. I think it's a little bit more inherently powerful than Deadly Rollick. So I would say it's going to eke Deadly Rollick out in the 4.5 slot.
To be honest, I think it's also better than Toxic Deluge. Maybe I give it a... What's that 4.8?
Well, that's good because Deluge is a 3.75.
Yeah, and we said... Oh, 3.75. Okay,
yeah,
okay.
Diabolic
okay.
Intent is the 4.7. Do you think this is better than Diabolic Intent?
No.
Okay.
So yeah, so we think it's a what?
I think 4.5. I would wiggle it to 4.6 if you want to just like...
4.6 it is.
Great. And then that way it's solidly slam it.
What was that?
Solidly sandwiched, but I was about to say slamwiched.
Solidly slam it right in the middle.
Solidly slam it! All right. Bolas of Citadel. 3 and 3 black for a legendary artifact that says you can look at the top card of your library at any time. You may play the top card of your library, and if you cast spells this way, you pay life equal to its converted mana cost rather than actually paying its mana cost. And you can tap and sacrifice 10 non-land permanents to have each opponent lose 10 life.
Yeah, we're not using the last ability much, but we're using that top ability a decent amount. This card once was, I think, a little bit more than it is now. It got tried out for a while, and I think now I've kind of delegated it to, like, the lower color, lower power decks to because they need a little bit extra oomph.
Unless you're playing, like, a heavier artifact synergy, then I could see playing this. But, like, I've seen decks that play Magda in the 99 with the intent to sack 5 treasures and put this into play. And I've never seen Magda actually do that. I don't know how strong that actually is, but I've certainly seen people try to do some wild stuff with it.
Yeah, Tinker, Bolas of Citadel, something that's very powerful in Vintage. Unfortunately, we don't have access to Tinker in our format. We do have Transmute Artifact, which is close, but you still have to pay that mana.
Yeah, you're normally still spending 6 mana on it, or maybe even even more if you're sacrificing like a one mana artifact. It's even hard to like entomb for this and then like Goblin Welder it back, because Goblin Welder is a bad card that takes time to set up. So it's tough.
And then also, I just want to say that like CDH has to play more lands in our deck than Vintage has to play. Because of Mox, Vintage can play like a hilariously low amount of lands, even compared to CDH decks when it like comes to like the percentage of lands to their deck as percentage of lands to our deck. Like realistically, I don't really want to play Bosa Cetala unless I have like less than 25 lands in my deck. Because even like 28, 29, you're just going to hit double lands too many times in a row. And if you spend all of your 6 mana or your tutor and you sacrifice this and do all this shit to get Bosa Cetala in play, and then you just get stuck by your own double land, that is not good. Not acceptable. There's so many better cards than that. So it's gotten knocked down. I think it's probably around a 4 for me.
And all these other ones like this are going to have upside on their own. Yeah. Whereas like this needs Necropotence, or it needs Sensei's Divining Top, right? Like it needs something else to make sure that you can consistently get cards you want and go through your whole deck, whereas like all these other ones are just gonna find you your win on their own and not get stopped at any point. So I think I agree. I think Boltless Citadel is a 4. I think it's worse than Necro, and it's probably gonna be around like the worst of these mass card draw for life spells in black here.
I think I know the last card. There was only one more.
Yeah, but I want to just make sure, do you like Boltless Citadel more or less than Cabal Ritual?
I guess more. Only just because like it does more, because it's a cooler card. It's probably less strong.
Than Cabal? Yeah, probably.
Cabal can be +3, which is really crazy rate on mana.
Well, I mean, if we're talking ceilings, like Boltless Citadel wins you the game.
Would you rather have the mana to cast a spell, or the spell but no mana to cast it? Screw Beats Flood?
Screw Beats Flood. So I'd rather have the big spell and hope get there to eventually. Be able to cast it in time.
Boltless
Citadel
better.
All right, there we go.
There we go.
I love when we use like limited thoughts
that don't exactly transfer. Like, what's some other piece of magic information in my brain? Let's just use that.
All right, so what do you think our final card is?
That's got to be Peer into the Abyss.
It's totally Peer into the Abyss. Yeah, this is 4/3 black for a sorcery that says target player draws cards equal to half the number of cards in their library and loses half of their life. Round up each time.
7 mana.
7. What did I say? 4/3 black.
You said it. I'm just reiterating. 7 mana.
Just because it's so much fucking mana.
Necropotence is 3. Ad Nauseam is 5. Boltless Citadel is 6. This is 7. Now, I will say, if you resolve this one, you're winning the game. You are. You are winning the game. You are. Because half of your deck is so much more than Ad Nauseam can grab. Because Nauseam is normally getting like 25 to 30 cards, if-ish, you know
on
what I mean?
On a good day,
and
yeah.
And you normally have like 85 cards left in your library, so it's not getting half. If you have 85 cards left in your library, this is getting like 42 or 3, so this is like a lot more than that. The issue is sorcery speed is so much worse than instant speed, and also, it's 7 mana. Like, you have to spend, you have to get to 7 mana, which a lot of times, it'll take you an extra turn to get to. You can get to 5 mana on turn 2, but getting to 7 mana, you might need to wait until turn 3, and then by then, your window closed, which is, like, the whole point of playing Ad Nauseam, because your window is brief and you can take advantage of it early.
This is also the only one of these that can get Deflecting Swatted to another player, too.
Woof.
So imagine spending 7 mana thinking you're going to win the game for someone else to draw half of their library, and then you still lose half of your life rounded down because you're an asshole.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say, though, this out of all the life lost spells, this one is the one that doesn't care if you're at a low life. You lose half your life no matter what.
That's what I always liked about it, because when someone knows you're playing Ad Nauseam, you're getting attacked. So even though this would make your Ad Nauseam force you to stop at 7 life, like, I still liked having this so that I could cast this at 7 life and still present a win.
Definitely. You can cast this at 2 life and you can still present a win and draw half of your deck, which is huge. But like you briefly mentioned there, when it makes your Ad Nauseam worse, because now you kind of have to think about stopping at 7, whereas before you didn't have to stop until you were at 5 life. Sometimes just having to stop once you get to 7 means you lose out on like 5 or 6 or 7 or 10 cards. So if you make your Ad Nauseam worse, and then you're also putting a questionable card in your deck, that can be rough. I like Pure much more in the lower color decks, again, because those decks, especially like I'm thinking like Rakdos, like a lot of these cards get much better if you're in two color Rakdos, because you don't have the protection of counterspells, so you just have to jam every turn. I'll cast Ad Nauseam on turn 2, and then I'll cast Pure on turn 3 if the Ad Nauseam gets countered. That type of idea, still good, worse than it was in the past. Probably worse than it's ever been right now.
I definitely agree. I think we're at Pure Into the Abyss's lowest point in its career. It kind of got to a point where it was like, well, I think we're going to start to see either Ad Nauseam decks or Pure Into the Abyss decks, because these two effects do kind of fight with themselves, like you've been saying. But I think the meta then ended up changing over to stacks a little bit more. We stopped seeing so much Ad Nauseam, which means there was no way in hell we were going to start to see, like, exclusive Peer into the Abyss decks. If the format does switch around to go faster, I don't know that Peer into the Abyss's popularity is going to come back at that point then either.
Yeah.
Like outside of the two color decks that you're talking about.
I think Peer needs a couple other things to go along with it. Specifically, if you're doing like Hoarding Broodlord combos, it gets much better with Saw in Half, where you can just kind of basically create a win state from using much less mana than that full seven, kind of cheat it out. I think that's very good.
And you're not really playing Ad Nauseam in those decks either at that point then too.
And then also, if you're playing Dargo and you're playing things like Sacrifice and you can have easy ways to get your Dargo in play and make a big chunk of seven black mana right away, that can also be very helpful for the Peer. So you have to have a couple more specific things going on, I think, for Peer, but I still give it probably like a 3.5, 3.8 maybe.
I would too. Like the inner cam wants to give this a 5 because I just fucking love this card.
Card's awesome. Super sweet. You can't lose if you resolve it.
No, right? Yeah. So if that was a metric, this would be a 5, but I totally agree. I think 3.5 is where this is going to be.
Better than Yogg-Will, though, so can I give it a 3.6?
Well, Yogg-Will's a 3. We can give it a 3.6,
okay, great.
Though.
What's a 3.5 right now?
It was just going to be that,
just
actually.
This? Okay,
yeah.
Then yeah, 3.5 it is.
Okay, 3.5. Do you want to hear the full list?
I would love to.
All right, our worst card that we talked about today. Yogg-Moth's Will coming in with a rating of 3. Then we got Dismember coming in at a 3.1. Peer into the Abyss at a 3.5. Beseech the Mirror at a 3.7. Toxic Deluge at a 3.75. Cabal Ritual at a 4. Bola Citadel is also at a 4. Culling the Weak is a 4.2. Praetor's Grasp is a 4.3. Deadly Rollick is a 4.5. Necropotence is a 4.6. Diabolic Intent came in at 4.7. Demonic Consultation is a 4.9. And the rest of these cards are all 5s. Opposition Agent, Dauthi Voidwalker, Dark Ritual, Tainted Pact, Orcish Bowmaster, Wishclaw Talisman, Imperial Seal, Ad Nauseam, Vampiric Tutor, and Demonic Tutor.
The top 10's all 5s.
Top 10's all 5s.
How it should be. We rated these cards perfectly,
I think. Such a damn good job on this list.
We're professionals.
10 out of 10, Dylan. Nicely done.
Thanks so much for watching. If you'd like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Kajo Alex, Sean in the Ice, Mark Cirillo, SoCal Acura, Stormageddon, Luke Cook, Demon of Rosgrease, Peter Stewart, Uncle Butts, Kuwaja A. Hamid, Lauren Connell, and Baby G-Bus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do that at playtowinmtg.com.
Thank you, Dragon Shield, for supporting the show. Make sure you use our affiliate link and code playtowin5 to get 5% off your order there.
You follow us on TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram for more content.
Thank you so much for watching.
See you next time.
Nicholas Boulder, reactively praises enemies, Tyler Watson, Brian Barrington, Zachary Colson, Tyler H, Tyler X the Tree X, sorry I butchered it that time, Mulcroft, Driving Crooner, Base the Ace, Dalton Poti, Tadonis, Hobo Ghost, Mitchell Shepard, Justin, Man Solo, Pedro, Jacob Depp, Michael Ballou, John Wild Thing, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.
Okay, real quick, if you type a card name in wrong, and if Scryfall says, did you mean this? What they give you should be a card. They shouldn't give you something that's not a card. I shouldn't click on it and go, we don't see what you mean all of a sudden. That was rude.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.